Afghan security forces report heavy fighting in Kunduz.
The Taliban continues to take over Afghan cities. This is Monday, the 9th of August, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, a closer look at an Afghan woman in danger who made her way to the U.S. A wrap-up on the Olympic Games, turning marine waste into building blocks. It is all on today's VOA Asia. Taliban fighters have seized key government buildings in the northeastern Afghan city of Kunduz, leaving government forces hanging onto control of the airport and their own base. A provincial assembly lawmaker said that Sunday. Matthew Larantanda reports.
The Taliban offensive across Afghanistan has now seen the group seize control of several key official buildings in the city of Kunduz, leaving only the city's airport and a military base in control of the government. That's according to a local politician. This video released by the Taliban is said to show its fighters walking through the police headquarters there. The politician told Reuters that militants have also taken control of government buildings in another city, the capital of Saripol province. Similar reports are coming from at least two other cities as well. The news comes only a day after the funeral of a senior spokesperson for President Ashraf Ghani's government, who was assassinated by the Taliban. In recent days, the Taliban have taken a third city, Zaranj, the first provincial capital seized by the group in years, and there are hundreds of people stuck on the border with Pakistan, which was closed after the Taliban took control of a crossing there last month. Afghan security forces report heavy fighting in Kunduz, a strategic location and home to 270,000 people. The Taliban's advance has gained momentum as American and allied forces withdraw from the country.
That was Reuters reporter Matthew Larantanda. Overall, the Taliban fighters overran three provincial capitals as the insurgents intensified pressure on the north and threatened further cities. The insurgents have taken dozens of districts and border crossings in recent months and put pressure on several provincial capitals, including Herat in the west and Kandahar in the south, as foreign troops withdraw. The offensive has gathered momentum in recent days after the United States announced it would end its military mission in the country by the end of August. Health officials in Kunduz said that 14 bodies, including those of women and children, and more than 30 injured people had been taken to the hospital. The Taliban have also taken government buildings in the northern provincial capital of Saripol, driving officials out of the main city to a nearby military base. On Friday, they captured their first provincial capital in years when they took control of Zaranj on the border with Iran in Afghanistan's northern Nimroz province. VOA Asia continues. The U.S. has begun granting special immigrant visas to thousands of Afghans whose work for the U.S. military has made them vulnerable to attacks by the Taliban as the militants rapidly extend their control over the country. VOA's Madi Merayin spoke with one woman who left Afghanistan as part of a previous stage of the SIV program.
32-year-old Afghan architect Masuma Derijam left her country for America in 2017. She was worried her work on U.S.-funded development projects in Afghanistan made her a Taliban target. One of those projects involved helping restore the Darul Aman Palace in Kabul that suffered major damage in Afghanistan's civil war of the 1990s. She recalls an encounter with the Taliban while working in another part of Afghanistan.
I was in Kandahar with a team of Afghan colleagues driving for a site visit to a U.S.-funded project. Our driver realized that a car was following us. We changed our route and immediately called the Afghan security forces. They came and then the car disappeared. Later on, the security forces told us that Taliban militants were trying to capture us. Luckily, the Taliban couldn't do anything. I think if they had captured us, I would not be alive now.
Delijam decided to start a new life with her husband and young son in the United States and gained entry through a special immigrant visa or SIV program. She now works for a construction company in Washington.
Given the insecurity in Afghanistan, the SIV program was an opportunity for those who worked on the U.S. projects to live in greater peace and security. I am certainly pleased with it.
The Taliban released statements in early June saying Afghans who worked with U.S. forces will be safe as long as they show remorse and do not seek exile. But the U.S. group No One Left Behind says militants' attacks against interpreters working with the U.S. in Afghanistan, along with their family members, have killed more than 300 people since 2014. Dilijam worries her parents, brothers, and sisters in Kabul are at risk as U.S.-led forces leave Afghanistan.
For most of the Afghans who live here, our bodies are here, but our souls are with our families back home. When they are not safe, when there is war and insecurity every day, all I care about is their survival.
This IV program benefits both the U.S. and Afghanistan, according to Afghan sociology professor Hassan Rezai.
It proves the moral commitment of the United States to the safety of its partners in Afghanistan. The program also has a social impact. The immigration to the United States of tens of thousands of Afghans who help the U.S. military will create a vast social network that can communicate with Afghanistan and share life experiences with people there.
The U.S. government says 70,000 Afghans have immigrated to the United States since 2008 under the SIV program. Last week, it began the process of bringing another 2,500 Afghans to safety with the arrival of around 200 people at Fort Lee, Virginia. Mahdi Mihrain for VOA News, Washington.
We are happy you're with us on VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. The Tokyo Olympics are over. Steve Ross has the wrap-up.
Olympic athletes of all nations marched into Tokyo's mostly empty national stadium on Sunday evening, taking selfie photos and blowing kisses to the television cameras that, for this pandemic Olympics, served to take the place of live audiences. As white and gold fireworks lit up the sky above the Olympic stadium, the athletes interacted with performers whose music and circus tricks gave the final events the relaxed atmosphere of a street festival. However, some of the Olympians were unable to attend Sunday's closing event. Due to COVID-19 safety restrictions, they had to return home 48 hours after their final competition. The final weekend of the Tokyo 2020 Olympics held plenty of excitement. Brazil beat Spain to capture the Olympic gold in men's soccer on Saturday. Kenya continued its dominance in the marathon after a gold and silver finish in the women's event, and Eliud Kipchoge defended his Olympic men's marathon title in brutal conditions in Sapporo. Team USA showed its prowess in basketball, capturing its fourth straight Olympic men's gold medal on Saturday and seventh straight gold medal in the women's event on Sunday. Japan took the silver in its first appearance in an Olympics women's basketball medal round. And Team USA won its first Olympic gold medal ever in women's volleyball, beating Brazil in straight sets. The U.S. women's strong showing throughout the games in part helped Team USA top the gold medal count in the end and maintain its first place in the overall medal count, both beating Team China at the Tokyo Olympics. While originally intended to showcase Japan's recovery from the 2011 Fukushima earthquake, tsunami, and nuclear crisis, the Games instead became a pandemic Olympics and the first Olympic Games to be postponed rather than simply canceled. While Japanese citizens told pollsters that they worried about hosting a possible super spreader event during the COVID-19 crisis, once underway, attitudes appeared to shift toward the positive. The 32nd Olympiad allowed viewers around the world to acknowledge mental health issues in athletics, diversity in the form of LGBTQ participation, and multiculturalism as represented by biracial tennis star Naomi Osaka, who lit the starting Olympics cauldron flame. The flame and the competition in the spirit of international cooperation will continue when the Paralympic Games get underway here in Tokyo on August 24th. Steve Ross for VOA News, Tokyo.
U.S. President Joe Biden and First Lady Jill Biden held a virtual meeting over the weekend with the U.S. Olympic team. The president told the Olympians they had made America proud with their performances and invited them to come to the White House in the fall so, quote, I can brag more on you. He told the group, you remind us of what an amazing country we are.
And you represented every single thing that we stand for. You really did. And I just think that, you know, it wasn't just for a lot of you, it wasn't just your athletic ability, it was your moral courage.
The anticipated star of this year's Olympics was gymnast Simone Biles, who pulled out during the competition, citing mental health issues. Biden told her, you had the courage to say, I need some help, I need some time. He also praised Biles for her return to the games. And guess what? He said, you got back up on that damn beam. Doing a flip on a 4-inch beam is my idea of going to purgatory. Overall, the U.S. won 113 medals, 39 of them gold, 41 silver, and 33 bronze, leading in the total count and in each category. Now on VOA Asia, a New York Times report says as the coronavirus swept across the U.S., more than a million children, many of them in poor neighborhoods, failed to show up for public school classes, either online or in person. The steepest decline, the report said, was among kindergarten students. The newspaper said more than 340,000 kindergarten children did not show up for instruction. Analysis of the data, said the Times, shows that the pandemic has already sent back some of the most vulnerable students before they spend even one day in a classroom. The World Health Organization says more than 700 healthcare workers and patients were killed, more than 2,000 injured, and hundreds of health facilities destroyed in countries of conflict between 2018 and 2020. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
A 3-year analysis was carried out in 17 conflict-ridden countries and territories, including Ethiopia, Yemen, Syria, Mozambique, the occupied Palestinian territories, and Myanmar. New data show that healthcare continues to be under attack. So far this year, the World Health Organization has recorded 588 incidents in 14 countries with emergencies, causing 114 deaths and 278 injuries of healthcare workers and patients. The WHO's Director of Health Emergencies Interventions, Altaf Moussani, says the impact of those healthcare attacks goes well beyond claiming lives. He says the ramifications are significant and alarming, especially considering the ongoing COVID-19 response.
Their impact reverberates on healthcare workers' mental health and willingness to report to work, equally on communities' willingness to seek health care, and also drastically reduces resources for responding to a health crisis, amongst others.
Moussani says the ripple effect of a single incident is huge and has a long-lasting impact on the system at large. When health facilities are destroyed, he says, they need to be rebuilt. When healthcare workers are killed or wounded, he says a vital workforce must be reinforced. Building back those vital systems, he says, requires years of costly investment, years in which people in need are underserved.
During the pandemic, more than ever, healthcare workers must be protected, must be respected. Hospitals and healthcare facilities, including the transportation of ambulances, should not be used for military purposes. Essential conditions for the continued delivery of vital health care must be given the necessary space.
Moussami notes any reduction in capacity will interrupt services and deprive vulnerable communities of urgent care. The WHO is calling on all parties in conflicts to ensure safe working spaces for the delivery of health care services. It says people caught in emergency situations must be able to safely access care free from violence, threat, or fear. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can find us on Instagram and YouTube and at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thank you to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, Amy Heibels, Chris Lescao, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Milman. Please take care of yourself and enjoy the day ahead.